Trendstorm.
Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at the reason why Israel bombed Syria back to back. Israel bombed Syria two times over the weekend in an unprecedented escalation of hostilities between the two neighbors, both of which have a completely different narrative about what happened. Tel Aviv claims that it was responding to cross-border shelling from al-Nusra terrorists, while Damascus says that nothing of the sort happened, and that Israel intervened with the intent of decisively shifting the tide of the anti-terrorist battle away from the Syrian Arab Army and to al-Nusra's benefit. Both sides also disagree over the extent of the damage that occurred. Israel says that it destroyed a few military vehicles that al-Nusra had commandeered, while Syria says that it was actually its own troops who were killed and that civilians were also hit by the airstrikes. It's expected that both sides would have completely opposite sides to the story, just as they always do. But what's of particular interest this time around is the context in which tensions are escalating. The bulk of Damascus's attention has been on the northeast of the country in the so-called Race for Raqqa and subsequent Dash for Deir ez-Zor. But now, all of a sudden, the southwestern border with the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights has become a major hotspot. Regardless of the reason behind Israel's surgical strikes and whether it was indeed to respond to terrorist shelling like Tel Aviv alleges or to support al-Nusra like Damascus says, the fact indisputably remains that Syria must now balance its strategic focus between its northeast and southwest. Moreover, questions are lingering about the real motives behind Israel's intervention last weekend, with some voices claiming that this might have actually been more about securing a so-called buffer and the relevant de-escalation zone than anything else. Others, however, maintain that Israel has no interest in doing this. But the debate surrounding Tel Aviv's latest bombings has created fertile ground for some people to doubt the mainstream media narrative and consider whether Israel does in fact have ulterior motives, just like Syria claims. In addition, it shouldn't be forgotten that the next round of the Astana and Geneva talks are expected to begin early next month. So whether or not it was Israel's intent, last week's airstrikes could complicate these interlinked processes by emboldening terrorists and rebels alike to hold firm in resisting any pragmatic settlement with Damascus. All right, folks, so to begin discussing this very hot-button topic, we are joined by Ms. Vanessa Beely. She's an independent investigative journalist and photographer, and she's also the associate editor at 21st Century Wire. Okay, Vanessa, there are conflicting accounts over what's taken place in southwestern Syria. Tel Aviv says that they hit al-Nusra, while Damascus says that Israel bombed the Syrian Arab Army. So which of these two narratives do you ascribe to, and why?
Well, I mean, you know, this is insane. We're seeing yet again the absurdity of Israel using the ubiquitous self-defense line. The Syrian Arab Army is fighting al-Qaeda and other extremist factions in the area, and Israel claims it's responding to errant al-Qaeda rocket fire by basically attacking the Syrian army in Syria. Insanity. This is not the first time that this has happened. Israeli cooperation with Nusra Front and extremist factions has been going on probably since the beginning of the conflict against Syria. And clear indications are that in reality, Nusra Front or the various extremist factions are the custodial force assuring continued Israeli illegal occupation, colonization, and increased settlement in the Golan Heights, and also the pushing of the boundaries further into Syrian territory. And there are theories that have come from on the ground that in the past, Nusra Front, for example, has fired shells or missiles at the Syrian army from the no man's land in between the Syrian and the Israeli border in order to provoke the Syrian army to return fire. And of course, then we can say that errant missiles have gone into Israeli territory, which has then enabled Israel to retaliate against the Syrian army. I've also been told, and various other analysts have pointed out, that Nusra regularly uses this as a tactic in the sense that they will fire rockets into Israeli territory or close to Israeli encampments in order to give the message to Israel to return fire against the Syrian army while it's attacking al-Qaeda. So it's a very clear indication of the working together of Nusra Front and Israel. And we're seeing the blurring of the lines, in fact, between the forces on the ground, if you like, the underworld forces and the overworld forces, Washington, Riyadh, and Tel Aviv, working more and more closely together and exposing their alliance with the terrorist factions on the ground in Syria.
All right, Vanessa, you know, we know that the Israeli bombings occurred in the context of Syria making significant progress on the Eastern Front and in the two-week run-up to the next round of the Astana and Geneva talks. So what do you make out of the timing of these attacks, and what influence do you think they'll have on the three events that I just mentioned?
Well, I mean, this is familiar geopolitical patterning from, again, Washington, Tel Aviv, and Riyadh. It's that prior to the Astana talks, or prior to any form of peace talks and negotiations, there is always some sort of false flag attack. There is always a ramping up of the propaganda against the Syrian government and the Syrian army. And what we've seen, of course, is a major part of the talks in Astana will focus on the safe zones or the de-escalation zones. And of course, for Israel, what is of huge importance in the conflict in Syria is, one, to prevent any sort of Arab unity, but particularly to break the Arab Crescent, the alliance between Syria and Iran that for Israel is the greatest threat to its security in the region. And so for them, the Astana talks will be very important to try and push through the security of what they consider to be their safe zone in the south of Syria, a safe zone that they have been working on colonizing, as I said, on providing a custodial force via the terrorist proxies on the ground in Syria. And so that will be high on the agenda of Israeli objectives for the talks. But also what we're seeing is almost a sort of geopolitical tantrum from Washington, Tel Aviv, and Riyadh because of the success of the Syrian Arab army advances, particularly in the east of the country, whereas the U.S. had tried to prevent the unification of Iraq and Syria at Al-Tanf. In fact, the Syrian Arab army has created that unity to the north of Al-Tanf, thus marooning the U.S. garrison slightly to the south. And of course, for Israel, this is a terrifying prospect because it opens up the possibility of a road from Iran through Iraq and Syria and into Palestine. So what we're seeing really, I think, is an absolute hysterical reaction from the U.S. coalition, from Israel, and from Riyadh against the successes on the ground militarily of the Syrian Arab army. So it's a very knife edge point in the negotiations.
Okay, well, the last thing I want to ask you then, Vanessa, is about the role of Russia in all this, because Russia has excellent relations with both Syria and Israel, and for that reason, alongside its strict adherence to its anti-terrorist military mandate, is why it has thus far abstained from getting involved in these sorts of contentious bilateral issues. But how long do you think Moscow will continue with this policy? And also, what role could Russia play in helping to soothe tensions between these two?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a very interesting point. And again, it's a question of how Russia and Syria and its allies have held their nerve under extreme provocation from the U.S. coalition, from Israel, and of course, from Riyadh. Russia has stuck to its anti-terrorism mandate, but only because, to some extent, they're separating U.S. and Israel from the terrorists on the ground. Quite rightly, in some ways, they're maintaining a legal international viewpoint. But perhaps they're not yet equating politically and publicly terrorism with the red lines in international law that are being crossed by the U.S. coalition and Israel, including, of course, the U.S. recent use of chemical weapons, depleted uranium, suspected white phosphorus in Raqqa, and recent reports of the use of cluster bombs in Raqqa also. Russia's great fear, of course, is escalating this conflict to a potential global war in Syria between Russia and the United States, and they have consistently done all in their power to prevent it, including playing down their reaction to U.S. and now Israeli provocation, trying to keep it in the diplomatic court. The fear, of course, is to what extent will the U.S. or Israel, as basically, as I perceive them, rogue states in Israel, sorry, in Syria, ramp up that provocation? And at what point will Russia particularly draw their red line in negotiations? Because what will be on the table, particularly from Israel, of course, is that they dictate that Hezbollah must leave Syria or that the alliance with Iran must be more contained. Both of these objectives will be high on Israel's agenda. And for the sake of the region, we've got to hope that it will be a red line for Russia in its negotiations if it's to maintain the integrity of the axis of resistance in Syria, but also with the future of Palestine lying in the balance, of course.
All right, Vanessa, thank you very much. That was very comprehensive and far-reaching. We appreciate you sharing that with our audience. Now we're going to switch over and speak to Ms. Afra Dagher. She's a regular on our program, and she's a Syrian political activist. Hi, Afra.
Trendstorm.
Afra, Israel's bombed Syria multiple times over the years, but never back-to-back like what happened. So why do you think that is, and what makes this latest escalation different from all the others?
Yeah, true. First of all, again, I would love to say that this is self-evident that the original enemy of Syria is Israel, who occupies a part of Syria's Golan Heights. Israel depended on the so-called rebels who are backed and armed by Israel, by the whole world, by the US, by the GCC. That was to drain the power of our army during this long war on Syria since 2011. However, the latest advances of the Syrian Arab Army, of our army, towards east of Syria, towards our border with Iraq, which is a strategic point for the resistance axis, and they're united with the Iraqi forces. All that scares Israel. It is such a threat to this occupation entity who sees the Syrian-Iranian Hezbollah connection across Iraq is a real nightmare for its dream, its greed of keeping its hands on the occupation, on occupied Golan Heights, and to its aim in expanding for more Syrian territory. That's why they escalated this war in horrible way against Syria lately.
Okay, so if we look at what happened lately, one of the main contextual changes that have occurred between the previous bombings and these ones that we're talking about now is Russia's implementation of a de-escalation zone around Quneitra province, which is where the Israeli attacks took place. So, Afra, what I'm wondering is, how likely is it that Tel Aviv intends to exploit this initiative in order to create a buffer state in this area? And how successful do you think this move could ultimately be in any case?
Yeah, you were so right. For Syria, it is the memorandum of the escalation zone. However, for Israel, ironically, it is not. Israeli army, according to their media, declared an area in the occupied Golan Heights near the border with Syria, closed military zone. Not de-escalation zone, closed military zone, so you see, to prohibit civilians' access. So Israel is not committed to this de-escalation zone memorandum. Israel aims to secure the territory she stole from Syria, and the Iranian and Hezbollah presence in Syria, as I said, scared Israel. So such memorandum is a good chance for Israel to escalate its aggression on the Syrian army positions alongside with terrorists like al-Nusra Front, who are concentrated on its side, not on the Syrian side, in the border with Syria. And the UN will keep a blind eye on this Israeli violation to such deal. But for Syria, it is not allowed to respond to this Israeli attack on our army, on our people. The UN and the US will find a new accusation, as always. You see now the chemical attack, their lies about this.
Okay, yeah, I think you make some pretty good points, Afra, especially pertaining to the U.S.'s intentions in this whole issue. Now, that brings me to my next question, and it's that these escalating Israeli-Syrian tensions obviously affect more than these two actors, as we've been discussing. So what consequences can they have on Russia, Iran, and also, of course, the U.S., and what role do you foresee these three parties playing in this part of the crisis going forward?
As I always say, it is a war for influence in Syria, and Syria is a strategic point of gas and of oil meat in this region. Israel and the U.S. are the real enemy of Syria and against Syrians. ISIS is their unleashed dog. We see the new allegation, as I said, of the U.S. about possible chemical attack. At the same time, this U.S. is launching the white phosphorus on Syrians, on Iraqi. It is okay for them. They want to bomb more Syrian key military airbases. They want to paralyze the Syrian Arab army and to thwart any advance of our army and to prevent any response against the Israeli aggression on Syria. There were American spy drones and warplanes over Syria even before the accusation of such possible chemical attack, just to save Israel. There is also information, according to Israel Channel 2, they noted about an American aircraft carrier called George Bush on its way to Haifa port in Palestine. Iran, by its turn now, has the ability to launch Shahed missiles from its territory to Deir Zor against the ISIS, where the American want to bomb more Syrian positions, like what they did against Cerdan Mountain just a year ago, and that was alongside with the ISIS terrorists. Now the US want to find a way to those ISIS militants to escape from Raqqa to Deir ez-Zor. The US and Israel doesn't want any end to this war. Also, they send more weapons to the separatist militants Kurds in the north of Syria. Russia warned the US from more escalation against Syria. So we want that to be more strict. We as Syrians have a question. Why the Israeli jet was not getting shot down when they attacked our army? So let's see. This is not a normal war. It's a horrible war in Syria.
Afra, thank you so much for sharing that with us. We always appreciate your very valuable and priceless on-the-ground reporting and analysis about the very complicated events occurring in your country right now. Thank you again for speaking to us.
Trendstorm.
So, folks, if we think back on what Vanessa and Afra share with us today, it does look like Israel is up to no good. It does look like their so-called intervention or surgical strike wasn't what they said it was, because we do see that there is a pattern of hostility every time that Syria is about to destroy terrorists on its border with Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. The same type of stuff happens. Every time Syria is fighting against terrorists, even elsewhere, even as far inside the hinterland as Palmyra like a month or two ago. Same thing happened. So I think that we definitely do have some very reasonable grounds to doubt the mainstream media narrative and to question what Israel's real intentions are in this conflict. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.